Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I am your host for this first hour. Man, there was a lot to cover throughout this week as volatility really took hold, especially early on in the week for a number of markets. And we saw really a broad-based sell-off, some fear enter these markets at the start of the week and really for most of the week. However, at the tail end, a very interesting move to see U.S. markets recover fairly strongly. Still a down week, but they did recover fairly strongly. And the U.S. dollar, that continued to move higher. So there was a little bit of that lack of inverse correlation between the dollar and markets at the end of the week. But we will get into all of these moves, including the continued sell-off in the precious metals throughout this full first hour. I'm kicking off the show with Rick Bensignor. He writes Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. That is an institutional newsletter read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. On the retail side, he writes in the No Trader and just started a new piece called 7-Eleven, where Rick selects no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs that he thinks will outperform. Rick, let's start off with U.S. equity markets because the markets were already in a downtrend. The S&P had been down 2, maybe 3 weeks in a row heading into this week. And to start the week, it gapped lower. There was just that general fear trade that didn't necessarily take everyone by surprise at the start of the week, but it was on the back of, I don't think, not a whole lot of news events. It was really just traders saying, look, this has gone too far. Let's start taking some profits. Give me your thoughts on the S&P, in particular, the correction that took us to a low this week of 3209. It wasn't all that long ago that the S&P was up at closing in on 3600, so we've given up a fair bit here. Rick, give us your thoughts on how the S&P stands, please.
Hi, Corey. Thanks for having me. So, you know, the market just closed, and we do have a small up. With the gap, I guess we still have a lower week. I was looking relative to Monday's close, but no, when we look at versus last Friday's close, we still had a minor loss on the week. So the market has still been under general pressure, and I do think it's been profit taking heading into elections. It makes sense. We had very strong August, and typically when we have I think July was decent too, and when you have strong summer months, which doesn't happen that often, September tends to be a weaker month. And we are seeing, you know, sellers come in, and it makes sense. The market ran to new all-time highs after. Just think about where we were 6 months ago and what had occurred in March and the huge decline. So the fact that we turned around, made new all-time highs, which I certainly didn't expect. You and I talk just about every month or so. We do this broadcast together. And at the time, I said, I didn't think there was any shot that the market was going to make a new high in 2020. So we did make a new high. You certainly brought late to the game buyers in on that new high. It's 2 weeks worth of rallies into new high territory were evaporated in, two selling days. And then it's been down for basically all of September. And what I've been telling clients is that just about at 3,200, give or take, down to roughly 3,050, give or take, is the zone that you want to be a buyer in on a pullback, regardless of what made the pullback occur, so that if we had the opportunity to get long and really materially increase long exposure, that to me is the area that you'd want to be doing it. And so this week's low, Thursday's low was, I think it was 3208 or so. So, we kind of got towards that top end of the zone with a strong bounce today, Friday. of 52 points or so. And, you know, I think between now and elections, it's unlikely we make a new high. If we do, it's a minimal new high. That's probably meant to be sold. So to me, anything north of 35.55, I'd be a seller into. But you know, that's at that point. At this point, that's still 250 points away. I don't know, 280 points away. It's still a long ways up, and I suspect we'll still see some distribution take place going into the elections. It makes sense if you're a portfolio manager. And there's a decent chance you were trailing this year because of the decline in any type of selling that you did back in when the market was coming off. If you hesitated at all to get back in, then you're probably trailing what the S&P is doing on the year. And it's not up much at all, but I would say the average PM is probably behind the ball and down versus the market, as they typically are. You know, if you get the opportunity between now and elections to get back in into that zone, I think it's okay. And look, there's still talk on the street that a Biden victory would knock off, you know, 10% from the S&P. Is it possible that any of the selling that we've seen in September has that built into the seller's thinking? I would think so, because look, he's still ahead in the polls. I don't give the Democrats. We've seen them too many times blow elections in the past. So even though Biden's ahead in the polling, I can't be sure as a strategist that they're going to pull this victory out anyway, just because of, you know, it's like watching the New York Giants play a football game with 20 seconds to go that they're winning and somehow they manage to lose it. I've seen it happen so many times over the years that, you know, it's kind of like I put the Democrats in the same category as even when it looks like victory is assured, somehow they don't always pull it off. So I think that when you're a portfolio manager, and you have a fiduciary responsibility and you've got some profitable longs and the market's still not, you know, in percentage terms, is not that far off of all-time highs. I don't know, you know, you shouldn't get too strongly questioned if you take some profit somewhere between here and, you know, what are the current highs. And barring everything falling apart, then this 3,200 to 2,950 or 3,050 zone is kind of, you know, that's about 150 point range that I think, just based on a whole bunch of indicators I look at, probably serve you pretty well to do, as an individual investor, to do some material buying for the bigger, longer term, you know, bull market. And knowing that the Fed kind of has your back, I think it's just a matter of knowing where and when to kind of add your exposure. And I'm not saying that if we got into that zone, it absolutely positively would curtail the decline such that you wouldn't have any downside or drawdown to it. But I think, you know, that's where I plan on, even in my own account, putting on more exposure, cash I've raised, and thinking that that's, you know, a pretty good place. And in the big picture, it's tough to fight the Fed. We know that. I kind of think Jay Powell, our Fed chairman, is a man of his words. And if he says that the Fed will do anything at all and necessary, you know, to keep the economy afloat, and they're not purely looking at what the S&P is doing, they're looking at the economy, but it kind of gives you, as an investor, that what we call the protection of a Fed put. And, you know, there's no reason to think that we'd go back and visit anywhere near where we sold off to in March. And of course, look, the numbers are getting worse. Look in Europe, France, Britain, Italy, Israel's is in total lockdown heading into Yom Kippur on Sunday. You know, it's kind of unheard of, but the numbers are picking up in the world, not in a good way. And there's 40,000 U.S. students at universities that have COVID right now. And, you know, it's things have not improved much at all, given all the time that we've had to work on things. But look, the virus and a vaccine is going to take into 2021 before there is any likelihood of an approved vaccine. And there's still this overhang on the market. But I'm not sure, other than, you know, what I've said, which is long term, the market is bullish. Shorter term, it still has problems. But if we pull back, you know, into this 3200 to 3050 zone, I'd be content on being a bidder into that area.
So, Rick, as much as you say the Fed doesn't react just to the markets, they look at more economic data, doesn't it seem like the markets right now are almost testing the Fed because of the last few press conferences that Powell has given? He said they're okay with inflation getting over 2%, but they actually don't have any predictions of showing inflation getting over 2%. And Powell more or less has said that, you know, they're going to stick to the current tools in use right now. It's almost as if these markets are selling off a little bit, fine, some profit taking, but seeing if they can force the Fed's hand into some earlier action.
Well, it's a good point. It's a good point because there is some buzz around portfolio managers about whether or not the Fed really has enough tools to keep printing and doing everything they would need to keep markets aloft. So I would agree that there is a little bit of testing here, and the testing isn't somebody saying, okay, Mr. Fed Chairman, prove to me what you got. I think it's more of a sense of taking some profits, looking at what's going on with COVID, and we're well into this disease, and yet we're not. When you look at the numbers and you see the growth, and that areas that had flattened the curve are back into sharp uprises, I think people are concerned. And when you're a portfolio manager, you have to remember too that there's multiple influences that determine why you make a decision. Part of it is just because you think it's the right decision to do, and part of it is because you also have a job and you want to keep that job. And part of that means sometimes doing what you don't necessarily think you should do in the market, but it's more related to covering your rear end and doing kind of what you feel you have to do in order to keep that position. And that's often the case in corporate life. You know, whatever field you're in, there's the doing what you think is right, and then there's doing what you think you're expected to do, regardless if it's in agreement with your own thought process. And as a behavioral market strategist, this is the type of stuff that we have to look at all the time. And my 40 years exposure to both the trading side of the market, where, you know, I traded in the commodity pits for 12 years at the start of my career, and learning markets that way, to being on the sell side of Wall Street for many years as a strategist, to being on the buy side of Wall Street as a portfolio manager, I think that, you know, I understand this particular conflict more than most people do because I've been in the roles myself. And I think not enough people put weight into just how much psychology plays a role of what you do as a decision maker. So now, to specifically address that to your question and testing the Fed, I don't think the psychology of a PM, right, a PM being a portfolio manager, is directly in thinking of, okay, Mr. Chairman, let's see what you got. I'm going to do some selling. And if collectively enough of us do selling, you know, it might go down and I could buy it back lower and let's see what you got. I think it's more coming from what's going on in the world economically, the businesses that will never come back, a very, very divisive country And the politics of what is going on in America now is, to me, probably the most disturbing I've ever seen in my 61 years of life. It's very disappointing to see what's happening. The fact that even, you know, today was the you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's body was lying in the Senate building. The top people in Congress and senators on the Republican side did not come and pay respects, right? So no Mitch McConnell, no McCarthy. To think that a Republican of such high level would not come to pay respects to a Supreme Court justice because she was on the liberal side is, like, again, to me, it's more than disappointing. It crosses the line of just so personal versus you have such a high position in the country, and you let politics get into every single thing you do to the point that you don't even pay respects to a Supreme Court justice. It's really terrible what's going on in the country, and it's on both sides of the aisle. I'm not blaming the Republicans any more than the Democrats. It's just politics has taken over this land, and just to see the discourse between people, friends who, you know, some are on the left side, some are on the right side, and the arguments they get into now, and just how divided this country is, and what it teaches our children too about respect, about politics, and just it's getting really nasty out there, and it's in many ways it's really shameful, and I think the global the other parts of the world look at America and in many ways laugh at what has occurred here and will do their best to take advantage over time of America's weakened position in its global stance. And that's just a shame.
Yeah, it's ugly. I hate watching all of it, but we're all forced to follow it because it is relevant to our everyday lives. And
yeah,
but I'm up in Canada, and I would say things aren't much better here, but boy, oh boy, it's real ugly down in the U.S.
Yeah.
Let's move on, though, Rick. Let's chat about some other markets here. Let's talk about the U.S. dollar, because the U.S. dollar was key to, I think, a lot of other markets, especially commodity sectors, supporting runs higher. But the dollar really just went through almost a crash there for a couple months, and now this week started to bounce back. Most recently put in a low of 91.75 on the dollar index, closing the week in the mid-94s in the dollar index. So a bit of a bounce back, but still at levels that we saw just in July, considering where the dollar was back in April and May, over 100 on the dollar index. Is there still that much room to run higher for the dollar?
There is room to run higher simply because the market had gotten so leaning bearishly on the dollar. And I myself was bearish the dollar. We called the breakdown. We also called the bottom at 91 and change. In fact, months ago when it was trading in 99, I said the breakdown would take us to 93 to 91 and a half. And then when we got there, not only did the uptrend line from, I think it was the 2011 low, come in, so like the major uptrend line came in and caught the low of the move, but also from the timing models we look at, we had downside exhaustion indicated. So we've been playing for a bounce. At this point, in general terms, 95, 96-ish, you know, is general support. If I was somebody, a portfolio manager who might have missed this down move and am caught long higher, I'd say anything, if you got to 97 and a half, you'd be very pleased to be able to get back that far. And that's where you'd be laying out dollars in a big way. So I'm not going to fight this bounce just yet. It was a predicted bounce from a kind of, I don't want to say obvious level, but for the way we look at the markets, we've been telling clients now for the month of September to have covered shorts and play for a bounce here. And it's just a matter of how aggressive you want to be on the downside. You know, back in March, I think it was the dollar got to about 102 on its rally. And just as, you know, the stock market sold off, the dollar peaked and it's unwound every bit of it. And even part of, you know, look, interest rates are low everywhere. But the dollar, you know, sold off over 5%, which for the major currency of the world to have done, it's a dramatic move in 2020. So from 102 down to 91 and change, it's essentially 10% move. It got overdone. And I think, you know, the rubber band stretched too much in one direction. It'll correct itself. But I think the dollar is somewhat damaged on a longer term basis. And I will be looking to sell the dollar in the future. I'll just let it kind of come to me and wait somewhat for a further bounce.
So are you carrying over your predictions for the dollar into some of the commodities? Obviously in the inverse side, but gold was moving higher. Even oil was well supported as this dollar has been moving down.
Yeah. So the commodity markets are certainly collectively in a pause mode right now. And we can talk about oil in a second and the fact that it's still at $40. But think about where oil was just a few months back, especially even if you take out of the equation the fact that oil futures went negative for a few hours. And that's just a factor of, you know, going on at the time. So if you look at oil kind of really bottoming, if you look at maybe second month oil or what was considered the active contract at the time, oil probably got down to, I don't know, $5, $6, $7, give or take, somewhere in there, if I recall, and then got as high as 43 and change. So, you know, you had almost a $40 bounce in oil as the dollar was declining. And you'd expect that as the dollar was weak, oil would be a gainer the same way gold was. Not that there's been demand for oil. Look, people aren't. I drive a fraction in a month of what I used to drive, and people who drive to work who aren't driving to work. I mean, just oil demand is well down, and the fact that oil's at $40 is a surprise itself. But let's talk about like the dollar and the effect on gold. Gold ended up making a new all-time high. 1924 had been the all-time high for an active front month futures contract, going back to 2011. And, you know, we surpassed that. And now finally we're seeing gold pull back. And the thing that I have to wrestle with myself and the positions I have on in gold and gold-related equities are that the long-term fundamentals still favor gold, but almost everything I've looked at from timing perspective says that gold has peaked. And even though it could even turn around and make a new all-time high, the risk in first buying gold, you know, anything north of 1950 is rather high. So I think gold probably has its high in place for a while. And I do not expect gold to make a new high by before elections and possibly year end. I've kind of got this battle going on in my head between long-term fundamentals and shorter-term market exhaustion, which means, you know, it could be months and months before, if not even longer, before we see gold turn around and make a new high. So part of me says got to take some off the table and just lock in the profits I have because they're still good profits. Versus am I looking to buy the dip and where is that place that has the least downside to buy? And, I can easily come up with different technical support levels. The question is, which is the one that's actually going to hold? And until I get enough timing signals to match the levels of where gold is as far as support. I want to kind of see both. I don't want to just play for a bounce at a support level. I want to see other factors come in, including timing, that would suggest that it's that gold is due for a bounce from a time perspective, from an open interest perspective, as far as where the speculators lie in how many contracts they're long versus what they're short, et cetera. There's several factors that would determine for me the next time that I'm going to come in and bid for gold. I mean, for me, the last time it was 1550, and I caught the low of the move months ago. It was earlier this year that we just touched down there, and that's where I bought some GLD, and I still have the bulk of it, and I'm literally wrestling myself with what to do.
Don't we need to take gold in a big picture sense too and understand that it started this year right around that 1550 level? So being at 1800, even down into the mid 1700s, that's still a good year for the precious metal.
Absolutely. It's been a very good year, and it's been, you know, if you look at really look at the long-term chart, go look at the last 20 years in gold. I mean, it's been a good run for gold. And certainly even off of the December 2015 low of roughly 1,050, gold virtually doubled in four and a half years. So gold has had a tremendous run. And I think the bulk of the public thinks, by having looked at what's happened in the last several years, they're bullish gold. And the thing is, you know, how much of the public sells anything close to, you know, even within 20% of the top of a move? My guess is the average person in the public holding gold, unless they're listening to a show like this, is just going to end up holding it for a long, long time regardless. And they could easily see gold go back to 1500 and where, you know, from 2000, and they're not going to do anything because in their minds, gold is bullish. And I tend to think it's right, but I've got signals that are saying otherwise. And it makes it tougher when I have long-term signals telling me that gold has reached a place that buying it incurs dramatic risk compared to, you know, let's just say buying lower priced. So I'll probably use rallies to lighten up some of my gold.
All right. Final comments then. Let's quickly just touch on oil, because again, oil, as much as the data shows the price should be lower, as much as I also think the price should be lower, along with a few of my other guests, it's just held in that $40 region, a little bit above there. This week it dropped a little bit below, but somehow managed to recover to right around $40 at the end of the week. How's oil holding up at this level here, Rick?
Good question, because I can't quite figure it out either. I mean, if you look at the chart of oil, since it got above, I don't know, about $35, this is looking at, let's say, a continuous futures chart. So you paste each month next to each other, because there are prices, different prices for different months of futures, and oil's in a, what they call a contango market. So the farther out you go, you know, each month you're essentially rolling to pay a higher price. And when I put those all together, we basically closed on the rolling 200-day moving average. It's been resistance up until now. We've gone a little bit through it. But I myself, Corey, don't quite understand why oil continues to hang at $40 and doesn't get a material breakdown. You know, we saw, I guess, probably earlier this month when October oil was the front month. Right now, November WTI oil is the front trading month. So October got down to 30, just north of 36, but it stayed there 2 days and then shot right back up. I don't know if it's the fact that so many people were bearish oil from earlier this year in the breakdown, that the shorts were just completely on the wrong side. And until you totally unwind those positions, oil keeps a bid to them. I mean, I have to think most of the shorts got knocked out. But when I look at open interest, which gives you a clue of which way people are positioned too relative to the movement, open interest has been fairly flat since August 1st. So with all the jostling back and forth, you can't really get any particular clue in which way to play this market. And that is, I think that's why we continue to stay here. The breakdown doesn't really happen, nor do we get above 43.5. So we've been in a trading range, and right now I'd say 42.5 is probably as good as I'd expect oil to go on this bounce. And I was really hoping it would get down to 32 and change, where I'd be willing to load up on oil. But I really thought there was a good chance we'd get there. And we, you know, right now, there's no real vig in playing. So I'll probably still look to sell as compared to look to buy oil. I can't bring myself to buy oil in the upper 30s, even as a trade. So I'm much more likely to be a seller. And unless it's OPEC countries or, you know, who's keeping oil elevated, I'm really not sure.
Hey, Rick, it's great having you on the show. Thanks for taking some time on these extended segments. We jumped to a number of different markets, but it's a good time to recap, especially the moves this week and some of these short-term trends that did start to pick up steam in terms of corrections and now a dollar bounce. A lot of uncertainty heading into the end of the year, so I completely understand a lot of range-bound moves here as we progress through the election, more and more COVID news, and hey, who knows what central banks are going to keep on doing. Rick, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Corey. Thanks for having me.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.